This is WGRE 91.5 FM, Greencastle, Indiana.
Good evening and welcome to Music for Life, music from DePauw. This week, band director Craig Paré invites us to take a short ride in a fast machine to the University Band Concert. Pianist Tony Weinstein tells us about a monumental recital he's bringing us this week. Music director Stephen Linville, two of his singers, and stage director Professor Tim Good share with us their perspectives on our fall musical, Jason Robert Brown's Parade. And violin professor Erica Dicker joins me to chat about our next Green guest artist, string quartet Ethel, with guest Native American flautist Robert Mirabal. There are lots of exciting things going on in the DePauw School of Music, and we're glad you could join us for Music for Life. On Sunday, October 5th at 3 p.m., we will get to hear our university band for the first time this academic year. And here to chat with me about it is their conductor, Dr. Craig Paré. Welcome.
Hi, Dean.
Good to have you back.
Thank you.
So you've got some really great 21st century musician things coming up on this program, in addition to some really fantastic music.
We do. We've got some good music, and it's been exciting the students as we've been playing at La Fiesta Mexicana, a wonderful tone poem by H. Owen Reed. Starting the concert off with Short Ride in a Fast Machine, a good arrangement of that by John Adams. And we're including a piece by Eric Whitaker, October. And I've done it a number of times, and it's a very expressive piece.
Wistful.
It is, and it suggests a lot of different things to different people. In fact, when one conductor to the next, it can often be a very different work.
Mm-hmm.
And over the summer, it occurred to me that I wonder if we might do something visual with it. So I contacted Andre Williams, who's a student here, who's just founding his new dance company, and asked him, would you be interested in listening to this work and seeing if it might be choreographed? And he was excited about it. So he's been working with his group with that. We've been working separately, and today we'll actually put it together for the first time.
Wow.
To have dancers working with this very suggestive music visually.
Now, it's one stage. How are you going to pull that off logistically?
The band is going to be around the perimeter of the back of the stage, like a U.
Wow.
And we're making room in the middle and downstage for the dancers. In fact, we're going to experiment with it, see if they have enough room with it today. But we're out of their way. In fact, it's going to be a very interesting concert moving from our regular setup to that and then back to our regular setup.
Right, right. So typically the way an ensemble is arrayed on the stage mm-hmm. has more about them hearing each other and how this works and who should be in front of whom and how far this should go. In this case, you're just going to line them up in a big U around the back to give basically the entire dance floor mm-hmm. to the dancers.
That's right.
And where will you be?
About 18 feet away from them.
Levitating above the stage.
Actually, today I'll be experimenting with where I'm going to be. I know mm-hmm. I don't want to be in their way, but I need to be seen by the musicians because they're strategically placed in terms of instrumentation about the center of the higher instruments and ones that we really need to be heard.
Right.
Fanned out to the low winds and brass that move out to the left and to the right. But not having worked with the dancers, I'm not sure. I've talked with Andre with how much room that they need, but we want to make sure that they feel comfortable with whatever they've set up in the choreographed,
right,
that they can fulfill that with the stage that we're leaving them.
So we always record these earlier than they air, but this is actually being recorded on Tuesday the 23rd before our weekend airing of Music for Life. Do you have any idea how many dancers you're talking about yet?
I think he said 13 to 15.
Wow, so that's going to be a lot. That's mm-hmm. This is going to be very interesting programming. And what I love about it is you're taking H. Owen Reed, mm-hmm. the bread and butter of great wind band literature. Mm-hmm. It is a hallmark of great wind band literature, and something very new and modern, mm-hmm. October, along with it. And then spreading the distance between sitting to play a piece and moving back to make room for dancers. So mm-hmm. the program is
in order, Short Ride in a Fast Machine, a piece by Philip Spark, Sunrise at Angel's Gate, which depicts one of the national parks in the West. Molly on the Shore, Percy Grainger.
Gotta love that.
One movement of a small work by Charles Gounod, the Petite Symphony, the first movement of that. That's going to be kind of our transition music into October.
Mm-hmm.
And then we finish with La Fiesta Mexicana.
Wow. This is going to be a great program. For those of you who don't know the John Adams Short Ride in a Fast Machine, really a clever, rhythmic work.
Mm-hmm.
I bet the band is loving that.
It is, and I'm trying to be kind to the trumpets because they are regularly up in the stratosphere
yeah,
playing the
right.
same note time after time yeah. after time.
He's taking no pity on the trumpets in that part.
No, but what a great piece to stretch their wings on in the first program.
Yes, yeah, an incredibly exciting program, all the way from John Adams to H.O. and Reed with some dancing in the middle. We're certainly looking forward to it. It's on Sunday, October the 5th at 3 p.m.
And we're also going to continue this year partnering with the Putnam County Emergency Food Pantry and asking people that would bring a non-perishable food item that they could get a free ticket for the concert as well.
That's fantastic. You've been doing that for years, and we're all very appreciative that you do. So bring a canned food item, come for free on Sunday, October the 5th. At 3 p.m. in Kresge Auditorium. Thanks for coming in to chat.
Thank you.
Simon Rattle leads the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra in a performance of the original version for orchestra of John Adams' Short Ride in a Fast Machine. From the student recital hour of Wednesday, September 17th, 2014, tenor Joey Lepick and pianist Jennifer Peacock perform It's Hard to Speak My Heart from Jason Robert Brown's musical Parade.
Touch that girl. You think I'd hurt a child yet? I'd hardly seen her face before. I swear, I swore we'd barely met. These people try to scare you with things I never.
We're thrilled that Tony-winning composer Jason Robert Brown will be visiting DePauw in March. And we're making it a year of Jason Robert Brown because we're producing his musical Parade at DePauw as our fall musical. And here to chat with me about it is our musical director, Stephen Linville, and two of the performers in the show, Hannah Gauthier and Joey Lepick. Welcome.
Hi.
Hello. Hello.
Stephen, we better start with you. Tell us a bit about this show.
Well, Parade is based on a true story set in 1913 to 1915 in Atlanta and Marietta, Georgia. It is based on a trial. A young girl was found murdered in a pencil factory, and the trial is sort of set up to blame a Jewish man who was from Brooklyn to find him guilty. The musical goes through the entire trial and then everything that happened after the trial to try to prove that he was innocent. And in the end, the people of the town actually take him and lynch him. So it's not the happiest musical, but it is based on a true story, and it does have a lot of impact in the topics of how Jewish people were treated in the South, how African-American people were treated in the South, how women were treated in the South in this time period.
Mm-hmm. And actually not just in the South, how people were treated in this time period. It was an interesting thing. And you're right, it isn't the happiest-go-luckiest of musicals, but what's interesting about it is that it's really the story on the outside, in a way, is the foil to the story on the inside, which is how this man and his wife come from a dysfunctional marriage to actually coming to appreciate and care for each other. And Joey, you play that man. So is that how you would see this as well?
Yeah, it is how I would see it. I play Leo Frank. He's the center of the trial and the controversy that happens in this town.
And he's not a very nice man, as it opens in some ways.
No. In the beginning, he's kind of portrayed as a very uptight and very nervous man who doesn't treat his wife or the people around him very well because he doesn't feel welcome in this town, and he feels like an outsider. So he kind of is very focused on his work and his job, so makes him more of an outsider.
And Hannah, your role?
I'm playing Mary Fagan, the little girl who was murdered. And gosh, what else can you say about that?
Now, she gets killed early in the show.
Yes.
Does she reappear?
In flashbacks and sort of ghostly situations. So I don't go away forever. I'm still there.
This is a show full of heavy themes. How's it been going?
It's full of heavy themes. The music is really challenging. And on top of that, we've thrown some challenges at ourselves that you wouldn't necessarily have in other musicals. We've actually put the band on stage behind the singers, which creates a whole new realm of challenge where people can't see me conducting. I can't see them. We're having to listen through monitors, but at the same time, not let the audience see that there are monitors because we're trying to keep it looking like it's in 1913 to 1915. And some of the challenges with the history and what came after the trial has really been something that we've had to talk about with the cast and the crew and the production staff, because it did lead to some historical events that are not very friendly and that, frankly, are still taking place today.
Right. And Jason Robert Brown's music is kind of hard to categorize. He's an interesting character because he's had a lot of shows on Broadway for a short period of time and then had a cult following for that show. Mm-hmm. He's very popular on college campuses. But how would you describe his music?
It certainly has a very big rock influence to it. And this musical particularly draws heavily from other non-like musical theater traditions like black gospel and ragtime. And also his Sondheim, he has a lot of Sondheim influences and rock and roll.
Yeah, I think he longs to be Stephen Sondheim as a lyricist. Although his music is a bit farther afield than I think Sondheim's might be.
Yeah, it really does combine a lot of different aspects, including some of the music of that time. There are some John Philip Sousa themes that you'll hear throughout the show that keep coming back to remind you of the time period that you're in and where you're at in America. So it really is challenging music. And one of the things just in rehearsals that we notice is that some of the songs, they change meters every measure.
Yeah.
And so just counting is a challenge.
And Hannah, how are you finding time to fit these rehearsals into the life of a busy School of Music student?
A lot of the time when we're off stage, we can do our homework as long as we're still listening to what's going on stage. And
are there a lot of rehearsals?
Usually like one every day, yeah. They go for like a good amount of time, but we still have enough time to get everything else done that we need to.
Well, that's good. Well, the show is right around the corner. It opens
October 9th, runs the 9th through the 12th, the 9th through the 11th at 7:30, and the 12th at 2 p.m.
And tickets are available online or at the box office. And we've been putting kind of a PG-13 rating on this show because it does have some pretty heavy themes. But it is a good examination of America as it was then and who we strive to be now. And thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Also from the September 17th recital hour, soprano Julie Strausser joins Joey and Jennifer to perform another song from Parade, All the Wasted Time. Thank you.
Tony Weinstein has stopped by the studio to fill us in on what's on his upcoming recital on Wednesday night, October 1st at 7:30 p.m. in Thompson Recital Hall. Welcome.
Hi, nice to be here.
We're looking forward to your performance, so tell us what's on the program.
So I'm doing actually just two pieces, two very large pieces. One is a huge Schubert sonata in B-flat. It's the last one he finished. It's just an infinite piece in every possible way. And it's foil, in some sense, is the other piece I'm doing, and that's Pictures at an Exhibition.
Wow, that's an interesting pairing. How did you come to that pairing?
Well, actually, I wasn't thinking about the pairing so much as I was thinking about the fact that both of those pieces are wonderful and I want to play them. They kind of are both, like I said, infinite in their ways. And one is more kind of on the philosophical end of things, and the other one is more about the characters. They really go well together.
Yeah, so tell us about Pictures. Some of our audience may not know exactly what happens in Pictures.
It's a really unique piece. The story is that you're attending an art exhibition, and there are movements there to represent various paintings that are there, mm-hmm. and there are the promenades which take you from painting to painting. And mm-hmm. each one of these promenades is influenced by what you have just seen, and maybe somewhat actually by what's about to come as well.
That's a fascinating way that he actually makes the musical equivalent of enjoying an afternoon in an art museum. And some of the world's most wonderful and probably famous music is actually in Pictures.
Yeah, it's amazing, and it's incredibly innovative. There was nothing like it before, and actually, honestly, nothing like it after either.
And he wrote it first for piano, but then it went on.
Correct, yeah. The original piano version has its incredible charms. There's certain things that no orchestral version can really do. Mm-hmm. But the piece became more famous worldwide in its orchestral version, especially when it was orchestrated by Maurice Ravel. Mm-hmm. There are actually plenty of other orchestrations, each one interesting in its own way. There's one by Shostakovich that's very interesting as well. But it's the Ravel one that everyone knows. Mm-hmm. And in some sense, it becomes kind of a projection back to go and listen to the piano version.
Right. Yeah. And it's fascinating, whichever one you know first, to mm-hmm. hear the other mm-hmm. is really remarkable.
Absolutely.
So is the Schubert the one that, did he write the last notes of that?
Yes, he did.
He did. He got all the way to the end of this one.
That's the one he did finish, yeah. There's the G major that he never did finish, but this one it's the last Deutsch number, 960.
Uh-huh, yeah. 960. Yeah. So Schubert died young, for those who don't know, and left many unfinished works. Mm. One, actually, that we've now since titled as the Unfinished Symphony, although no one's quite certain whether it is finished in two movements or not. Right. But he was working on a piano work when he died that mm-hmm. was never completed, or at least by him.
Right.
This one has been completed. Tell us a bit about that.
Yes. Well, it's difficult to say whether he really knew that he was dying. He was obsessed with death in some sense.
For quite some time.
Yeah, most of his life. But I think in the last few months, I think he was aware that something was coming. And so he really produced some of his greatest works mm-hmm. right there and then. And among those are these three wonderfully infinite sonatas. And I keep going back to that word, and maybe I should use a substitution. Schumann referred to these as having heavenly length. Mm. And so there are these three huge sonatas, the A major, C minor, and the B flat. And then there's also the G major that he never did finish.
Mm-hmm. And as we all know, Schubert can be sublime at any length, but mm-hmm. these are remarkable pieces toward the end of his life. Mm-hmm. And it makes one wonder what might be possible had he not died so young.
Absolutely. I mean, he was 31, and that's a baby.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we think about the mature works of many of the great composers and how it took that many years, what if Schubert were that mature in his teens, actually, and through his early 30s? It's really remarkable what this could be. So it's a fantastic program. It's really fascinating. Two totally different moods from one half to the next, and you won't want to miss it. It's on Wednesday night, October the 1st, at 7:30 p.m. in Thompson Recital Hall. We're really looking forward to it. Thanks for coming in to chat.
Thank you very much.
From their concert of September 21st, 2014, Professor Orsineth Smith directs the DePaul University Orchestra in a performance of Joseph Suk's Toward a New Life.
Thank you.
I'm not typically the person that presents the PSAs on Music for Life, but this one is so special I felt compelled to do so. DePauw celebrates its many accomplished alums, and we are thrilled to bring back to campus James Stewart. James Stewart is a Pulitzer Prize-winning author, a writer for the New York Times, and a professor in the Columbia School of Journalism. And he is coming to DePauw to perform on piano with several friends, many of them DePauw faculty members. The interesting thing here is Jim Stewart graduated from DePauw, but not from the music school. He graduated from the College of Liberal Arts. But because DePauw prides itself on the integration of our School of Music and our College of Liberal Arts, Jim got a great musical education while here, and we're glad he's back to share his gifts. You won't want to miss this. Tuesday, September 30th, 7:30 p.m. in Thompson Recital Hall.
My name is Nick.
I'm Zach.
I'm Renan.
And we are Time for Three.
You're listening to Music for Life.
We continue our discussion about this semester's musical Parade with our stage director, Tim Good. Welcome, Tim.
Thank you.
Great to have you here again. You've done so many musicals with us, I can't keep them all straight. I think your last one was Into the Woods.
Into the Woods.
This is not Into the Woods. This is very different from Into the Woods.
It is. It was Stephen Linville's idea to do this show, and the subject matter is very heavy, even though it sounds very fun at the beginning. So that's that's the setup.
Yeah. Actually, this is written by Jason Robert Brown, who's a big fan of Sondheim's. And Sondheim has certainly taken on some tough conversations with assassins and shows such as that. And we were talking earlier in this episode about the challenges that Parade presents because it is a heavy-themed musical.
It is, and we found in rehearsal that the students approached it with their normal tenacity in terms of the art, in mm-hmm. terms of what they're doing. But when I staged the final moment, we had to stop rehearsal because they found it so shocking, mm-hmm. they needed to stop and process and talk about what is this thing that we're doing.
Right, right. And have you found that to be challenging throughout the rehearsal, or was it just that one incident? Has that continued?
That incident was a turning point for us, mm-hmm. and it showed mm-hmm. where the students moved from doing their craft well to a deeper understanding of what we're communicating, mm-hmm. what we're talking about, what it is we're doing here.
Right, which is really part of the art. That's what we're all about.
Yes.
So you've also done some really interesting prep work to make certain that our audiences are ready for this conversation that Parade will launch. Can you tell me a little bit about some of those efforts?
Sure. We, in fact, our display case out here was put together primarily by our student dramaturgs, which includes a very small noose because lynching is a key part of this story. The display case itself caused enough ruckus that we had to put a trigger warning notice on mm-hmm. it. We're also having an academic panel the week before, mm-hmm. which we're going to publicize more than we do most academic panels in order to get more of what this play is really about out into the community.
Let me just point out that that's actually Friday, October 3rd at 11:30, which is this week by the time this airs. We're always in the time warp when we're recording the show.
Another problem we face is there's an older review called Parade, which really is just happy and fun. And we want to make sure people don't think they're coming to that.
Right. And the conversations that we're having are to prepare the audience for the fact that while this depicts a rather unfortunate incident in American history, it in no way glorifies or encourages that type of behavior. It's just a sad statement of fact at the time.
That's one thing that came up with the students is they were concerned that we might be doing that very thing, is supporting racism and Klan membership. Of course, that's not what we're doing, but we are making a warning that this is not just long ago and far away,
right?
But this is part of us that we need to deal with and wrestle with, not in an accusatory way, but in a realistic way. Evil lurks inside each human. It's not mm-hmm. outside of us and out there. It's us.
Right. Excellent point. So is this challenging to bring this type of theater to the stage at an undergraduate institution?
Of course it is, yes. Because they come in, the students coming in wanting to do musicals and do fun, and even a quote-unquote serious musical like Assassins, it's still otherness. Mm-hmm. This becomes more about us-ness, and when we realize we're talking about this happened to real people, the murder of Mary Fagan, which often gets glossed over in the unfairness of the following trial. Mm-hmm. So we are fronting Mary Fagan because she often gets forgotten. Mm-hmm. So justice for her is part of what we're doing. And then what happened to the lynching of Leo Frank is another part of us, because out of that came the modern Klan.
Right, right. It's a fascinating, really challenging story. So Harold Prince, a great producer, wanted to put this show together, went to Stephen Sondheim to ask him to do it. Sondheim said, "Nah, I don't think so," even though he had done some really neat ones, and recommended Jason Robert Brown, who had written some easier musicals than this one, but really took to this. And to me, what's most fascinating about it is watching the love story evolve between Leo and his wife, which you don't see at the beginning of the show at all. And
you
then
don't.
You really grow fond of them together.
We spent a lot of time with those two actors getting the arc of their relationship, which carries the show. So the first half of the play is really about Leo and what happens to him, and ends with the trial and him being convicted. Act two is really carried by Lucille.
Correct.
Where she takes over and drives the action of the play. And so
getting the actors to work with that. Their musical ability is world class, and they have a little bit less actor training than they have music training, but they both dived into it with such vigor, and then we can utilize their understanding of music to understand the scenes, and it's been very fun to see them develop.
Right, and that's where our theater experts come in. So you come in for, on the musical side of the house, they've been training in this all along, and this is just part of their progress. We kind of pick them up midstream. In your case, we bring you really great musicians and say, now turn them into really great actors too, and you've got, 6 weeks to do it.
Pretty much. It has everything to do with their willingness. Of course, they can't learn as much as they can by studying acting, you know, but as performers and an ability to commit and focus, we can use a whole lot of what they already know to put into acting decisions.
Right. So this is going to be a really powerful performance, and we're looking forward to it. We've devoted quite a bit of this show to preparing the audience for what is certain to be a profound performance, and we appreciate you coming in to chat about it.
Thank you.
Our violin professor, Erica Dicker, has dropped by to chat with me about our upcoming Green concert with Robert Mirabal, a Native American flute player, and the Ethel String Quartet. So welcome, Erica.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
The Ethel String Quartet, pretty big name.
They are. They're a New York-based ensemble that has done a lot in terms of advocacy and community connection. And so sort of keeping with this amazing theme that we have going on at DePauw, really reaching out to the community, which has always been a school-wide thing. Mm-hmm. We've got Fifth House Ensemble here, but Ethel, these amazing guest artists, they have been for years developing really strong relationships with composers. Mm-hmm. They themselves do a lot of arranging of their own music, and this enables them to advocate for a lot of people out there whose music normally wouldn't get heard in certain contexts. And speaking of certain contexts, they also sort of install themselves in unexpected places. I think it was maybe 2 or 3 years ago, they did this great thing called the Truck Stop Project, in which they sort of did pop-up concerts at truck stops.
Right.
Another really exciting thing that I'm aware that they did, they have been, I think, for the past decade working with a Native American tribe, which resulted in sort of advocating for the music of young composers in a particular reservation. And this was documented on an album of theirs called Ashtali.
Right. It's really interesting because these folks, they're playing the quintessential stayed classical music instruments in the stayed quintessential form of the string quartet. And there's nothing staid or traditional about them. I mean, they're chops like crazy. These folks are fantastic performers, but they're really reaching out and breaking the mold.
Absolutely. That's what I really, really, really love about all of their projects and what they're doing. And I'm very, very excited that they're coming here and doing this crossover performance, again, with sort of an unexpected collaborator, Native American flute. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, Robert Mirabal, who's a great composer as well as flautist, that means he plays the flout, I guess. He's really paired nicely with the Ethel String Quartet, and it actually ties into the initiative you mentioned earlier, where they've been working on Indian reservations and really are representing the plight of Native Americans. It's really phenomenal effort that they're putting together, and it yields some terrific music.
Yes, I'm very, very excited that they'll be here at DePauw.
And they're coming up right around the corner on Thursday, October 2nd at 8 p.m. in Kresge Auditorium. Tickets are available online or at the box office. You can get them through the app. There's all kinds of ways to reach out and get tickets. This is going to be a fantastic concert. We're all going to love it. And thank you for coming in to chat about it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
From their CD, Ethel, here's the Ethel String Quartet, along with bass clarinetist Evan Zaporin, performing Zaporin's piece, Be In. Thank you.
Our producer, Matt Champagne, joins me on the other side of the glass, which he does so on rare occasion, this time on a sad occasion, upon the passing of the great conductor, Christopher Hogwood. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks, Mark.
Sad to see him go.
Yeah, it was a big surprise this past Wednesday when we heard about it. And the first thing I thought about was this guy brought me into really appreciating Beethoven.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the 80s as a music student, I didn't know much else from Carl Böhm and Herbert von Karajan in Beethoven interpretation. And when I first heard Hogwood, it was like throwing a window open on a beautiful spring day.
Totally different sound. And for our audience who may not know, Christopher Hogwood was in many ways the founder of the informed historical performance practice, where the performers would play music as the composer would have heard their music played, on gut violin strings and without vibrato and at the tempos written.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And he caught a lot of flack for it, too.
And now it's kind of become established, but boy, at the beginning, he really took a beating for this idea. And now it's really become very much acceptable as another way to present the music, and in many ways a more honest way, since it is the way that Beethoven or Haydn or Mozart or Bach would have heard their own music.
Yeah, and one of the things that I love the most about it is that, you know, Carl Böhm and Karajan and Fritz Reiner, all those guys are awesome, and it's great. But now we have this other way of looking at mm-hmm. this music.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's what this is all about, when we figure out a new way of interpreting classics that can illuminate them in new ways and give them new meaning for us.
And in the interesting thing being that the new way is actually the old way.
The new way
is the first way. And,
right.
You know, it's interesting you make that point, because von Karajan had this silky, perfect sound. No matter what he played, it was luscious and flawless and it was perfect sound. Hogwood, not necessarily so. Some of those recordings are really out there and not necessarily flawless, but boy, they are so well-paced and they are so heartfeltly spoken that...
Yeah.
It's just fantastic. So we were together mourning the passing of the great Christopher Hogwood.
So to mark this, we're going to play for the audience the Funeral March from Beethoven's Seventh Symphony.
Perfect choice.
Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of Music for Life. We love hearing from listeners. You can contact us by emailing musicforlife@depaul.edu. We're also on Facebook at DePaul Music for Life, and you can subscribe to our show on iTunes by searching there for DePaul Music for Life. Our student producers are Anna Gatdula, Matt Skiba, Burke Stanton, Rachel Amalfitano, and Hannah Gothier. Our 21CM graduate intern is Elika Okerstrom. Veronica Pedrell is our online editor, and our show is produced by Matthew Champagne in the Judson and Joyce Green Center for the Performing Arts at DePaul University in Greencastle, Indiana. I'm Mark McCoy, Dean of the School of Music. Thank you for listening to our show. Keep music in your life, and have a great week.
It's Music for Life.